Welcome to the Kings of Sport, the program that's changing the game one show at a time. With your hosts, Nate Milton.
Yes! That boy's good.
And Marcus Vandenberg.
Let's say!
So sit back and relax, because you're now down with the Kings.
And welcome to the Kings of Sport, the program changing the game one show at a time, a.k.a. the world's most dangerous sportscast, a.k.a. iTunes' longest-running weekly episodic program produced and hosted by two or more African-Americans who are not affiliated with a major network. I am one of your hosts, the Godfather Nate Milton. We've got a big week of sports and non-sports to talk about with you good people. So I'm not even going to waste any time. Let me bring in my co-host, the man who is single-handedly holding together the People's Republic of California through all this turmoil. Ladies and gentlemen, give it up for Marcus. Colby Covington called me a spineless bastard, too. Vandenberg, what's going on, brother?
Man.
That man, Colby Covington. I didn't even know that's where I was going with your intro, Marcus, but it just clicked in my head. I'm like, all right, we do need to spend at least 30 seconds talking about this fool.
Shout out to Andreas Hale of the Sporting News,
yes,
who wrote a column about why Colby Covington's comments are so dangerous. And for the people that, you know, just laugh it off or say he's working a gimmick, like, it's no, he's well past that line now.
Hold on, Marcus. For the people watching the video, this is why, if you listen to just the regular feed, this is why y'all got to follow us on the Patreon, because I almost it's been a long week. I was telling Marcus off air. It's been a long week. You know, I've been doing a lot of freelance stuff. I've done 3 or 4 podcasts. And so today I did a couple things. I'm doing the freelance for this nonprofit out in Austin, you know, doing like voiceovers and stuff for them. So we recorded for about 2-3 hours today. So my mind's all over the place. And I thought, Marcus, I was grabbing this Monster Energy drink that I bought from the corner store, mm-hmm. you know, a couple hours ago. And I reached in, and instead of buying the Monster Energy, I found the other can that I bought from the corner store.
Oh, no.
If you're watching the video at home, you can see this is 4 Loko grape hard seltzer, which I didn't even know, Marcus. 4 Loko was in the hard seltzer game.
I didn't know they were still in the game, period.
Exactly, yeah, because 4 Loko, if anybody that knows, like, they were the super high powered alcohol, and they got banned or taken off the shelves for a while. Now this is what I was actually going for. My mom, they got banned because it was too much for them frat boys at these colleges, and they ended up, you know, had a couple people have a heart attacks. I think maybe a couple people even died from just overdosing on these 4 Lokos. So 4 Loko went off the market for a while. They came back with a new formula, Marcus, that nobody on these streets was down for, because it just wasn't hitting. But I guess they seeing hard seltzers out here now. 4 Loko is like, I'd like to get back in the game. So I had to try it, Marcus. That's what I do. I try it this week, and I let the folks know on the next episode how it turned out. But getting back to Colby Covington, like you were saying, Marcus, like, I am, and you know, like, I'm not as deep in the MMA game as somebody like Andreas or yourself, or even John Pollock, Waiting, you know, friends of the program. But I'm a casual observer. And so, like, I heard of this guy. I think maybe the first time I heard of this guy was when he got his jaw busted up by Usman.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just like, okay, like, is this shtick? Is this, you know, because we know, like, UFC kind of is tangentially tied to Donald Trump anyway, just through the fact that Dana White, you know, spoke at the convention back in 2016 and has been a friend and a supporter of Donald Trump. But I didn't know, like, this dude was out here saying the crazy stuff he was saying. And so, like, to see Andreas's piece, I thought that was something that was necessary and well written. But then also, I forget, Eubanks, the fighter?
Mm-hmm.
Was it Sahara?
Yes. Eubanks.
Cihara Eubanks. And then there was another fighter, another brother that came out and said something yesterday. And I think he's got a fight coming up here pretty soon. But I couldn't tell you who he is. But yeah, he was just basically saying, you know, people got mad at me when I, you know, said something off the wall about, I think it was like 9/11. He said something off the wall about.
Yeah, this was a Twin Towers joke that, you know,
probably not the best thing to say.
Did not go well. No.
But he was like, you know, y'all said all this stuff. When I said that, when I tried to make that
joke. Adesanya, by the way.
Adesanya, yes. Okay. And, you know, he's like, but Kobe Covington out here saying all this stuff, and y'all are just, like, taking it like it's a joke. You know, like he's and it's funny, Marcus, because I was going to say, like, it's a joke, like, when Conor says something or when Chael Sonnen says something. But it's like, in retrospect, and I think Andreas spoke to this, in retrospect, we probably shouldn't have given them dudes a pass for some of the stuff they were saying at the press conferences.
The Conor Mayweather press conferences were uncomfortable, to say the least. And yeah, you're right. I mean, that's probably where Conor, I mean, listen, Conor's had a whole list of issues.
Yeah.
I think we haven't been on since he was arrested last.
Nope.
Which happened a couple Saturdays ago, but he's had a list of flaws, one of them being he said some things that are flat out racist and was never checked on it and will likely never be checked on it, because as we've seen with the MMA media, like, no one, if Dana White doesn't see the issue with Kobe Covington, he's not going to see the issues with some of the more nuanced comments coming from other fighters. So
no.
Go ahead.
I was going to say real quick, Marcus, like, it's something that isn't just in the boundaries of the UFC. Because if, you know, you and I grew up fight fans, you know, boxing fans. Like, boxing, I think, maybe started the trend of we're going to traffic in racial stereotypes and inflame people up to sell a fight. And, you know, UFC and MMA took it to the next level when you got people like, you know, Kobe Covington or people like Chael Sonnen or Conor McGregor. And so, like, yeah, Marcus, it's weird to me, and maybe you, well, obviously you would have a better perspective on this, being a member of the media, being a journalist. Like, why do you feel like a lot of this stuff hadn't been checked? Is it just that people are just saying, oh, they're just building stuff up to hype a fight, they're playing a character? Or is it that there aren't enough you or there aren't enough Andreas Hales, you know, covering MMA to say, like, hey, maybe we should go back and look at that?
I think that's the latter. I mean, there's just not enough writers covering combat sports to properly, I just check and balance of, you know, listen, if Kobe Covington said what he said and was playing basketball or playing baseball or playing football, like, this would not fly. You could not say, you could not have what he said during a Saturday press conference on top of his racist remarks to Usman post fight about smoke signals. Like, you could not say all this stuff in other professional sports.
Yeah, like, if Kobe Covington was a tight end for the Chicago Bears, he wouldn't be saying none of this. Because, like, I forget which Bosa it was, Marcus. Is Nick the younger one?
Nick is the one in San Francisco.
Okay, because I think it's Nick.
Joey's the one in the 49ers.
San Diego or Los Angeles now. That reminds me. We got to talk about these damn charges, Marcus Vandenberg. Don't let me forget.
It's the other way. It's
so Joey's the younger one?
Yeah, 49ers, Nick, Joey, younger, Chargers.
Okay, so it's Joey. It was Joey. Because Joey, when he was at Ohio State, he was saying all types of borderline kind of things. But as soon as he got to the league, we ain't really heard a peep out of young Mr. Bosa. So I feel like, yeah, the NFL has a way of kind of tamping down on speech, like, across the board. You know, whether you're talking about Colin Kaepernick taking a knee or somebody being racist or, your man Richie Incognito, you know, being a bully. Like, the NFL wants to project this image in a way that I feel like the UFC doesn't, or they don't care if they're perceived as, you know, kind of this outlaw sport in a sense.
Well, I mean, we're talking about true team sports where, you know, you're going into a locker room, you're having to face your teammates with MMA. Even though there is a locker room setting on some level, it's all individualism. So,
right.
You know, you don't have, you know, 20 fighters hanging out in a locker room, at least especially not now with COVID, sort of before and during fights. So I personally would like to see the black fighters in particular to take some kind of stand against UFC and Dana White, whether it's, you know, refusing to fight, or could you imagine if you had a pretty high profile main event featuring two black fighters, both fighters, you know, get in the ring, fight starts, and both of them just sit down and refuse to fight. Like,
Dana would be so mad.
And yeah, you could say, yeah, you know, Dana could just cut them both. But if it's two, you know, if it's Adesanya and, you know, filling another black fighter on Israel's level, like, he's going to have to think long and hard and twice before firing those two because of what they did. So, you know, will it ever happen? I hope so one day, because there's some serious issues within the sport of MMA. We're not even talking about the pay stuff. This is just,
I was going to say, this is even a separate conversation than, like, the fighters being able to unionize, which is something people have been talking about for a minute.
But, you know, it would have a real impact. I think it would be just as impactful as what we saw with the Milwaukee Bucks or, you know, with, you know, the New York Mets sort of going out to the field and walking off and not playing earlier this summer. So we'll see. But yeah, that sport, that there have been times when I watched a UFC show and felt dirty afterwards. Saturday was one of those nights. And I'm not sure how many times I can keep watching this sport outside of for work and continue to support a organization that clearly doesn't care about black people.
Well, yeah, well, there's obviously that, Marcus, but then here's the other thing that gets me, because, and I don't want, like, this is going to sound weird after we both kind of condemned Chael and Connor, but if I was to play White Devil's Advocate here, if I was to play White Devil's Advocate, I would say at least, you know, at the minimum, at the bare minimum, when Chael and Connor did it, like, there was some entertainment to it. You know what I mean? Like, there was some showmanship behind it. With Kobe, it's just, like, I don't know if I'm watching a fighter's press conference or if I'm watching Fox News or if I'm looking at Alex Jones, right? Because he's just out here spouting these cliche boilerplate, hard right, you know, damn near QAnon conservative talking points. And so it's like, for those that are like, oh, he's just playing a character, he's just trying to sell a fight, he's not even trying to sell a fight. He's just out here being hateful. And so it's like, yeah, like, as much as I want to condemn Connor and Chael, like, this to me is even more egregious, because at least with those guys, they were being creative with their racism, whereas he's just being an idiot. And I don't know what you do, Marcus, because as you said, Dana hadn't shown any implication that he's going to step in on this. So it's like, unfortunately, I guess it's up to what happens in the octagon. Like, it's going to take that, like an Usman, like some black dude to knock him on his ass. But even then, he'll probably still keep talking.
Yeah. I mean, Dana was asked about it today, over at Fight Island. And he said, I don't know if I heard anything racist that Colby Covington said. He flat out said it. I mean,
yeah, it's, yeah, and then the other thing, you know, like, LeBron James is many things, Marcus Vandenberg. I would not say a spineless coward terrorist is one of them.
This is, yeah, I mean, LeBron has been taking heat from not only Covington, but from the sheriff out here in Los Angeles.
Yeah, after I saw that.
The two officers were shot and ambushed. The sheriff out here decided to call out LeBron and wanted LeBron to match the reward money for catching the suspect, too. I think they still in the large. They haven't caught the person yet. But, you know, it just feels like he can't win at this point. He's going
to
be.
That's what I was just about to say, Marcus. Like, do you want him to get involved and you know, come find these suspects and help the community, Mr. Sheriff? Or do you want him to shut up and dribble? Because you're telling him, you know, to do both things at the same time. Which one is it?
Yeah.
And that's the other thing, man. I'm glad we're talking about this, Marcus. I didn't know this was going where this episode was going to go, but I'm glad we're talking about it because so much of the shut up and dribble crowd, so much of the, you know, I don't mind if you protest, just don't protest during the game because I'm trying to enjoy the game. So much of the, you know, oh, Black Lives Matter, but, you know, can we keep it away from the sports? You know, if I said that on my job, I might get fired. Like those type of folks, they don't say nothing when you got Kobe Covington out here saying these things, Marcus. You know, they don't say anything when you got some of these other, you know, white athletes who have spoken down about, you know, the Black Lives Matter movement. And so it's like, yeah, like you're not even living. Well, I was going to say after this week with Ruth Bader Ginsburg, which we'll talk about here in a second, like, Should we even be surprised at this point when folks that kind of are on that spectrum of, you know, the political line are hypocritical? You know what I mean? Because it seems like that's what they do, Marcus, and we shouldn't be fooled by now.
No, we shouldn't be surprised. I'll be curious to see, assuming Trump loses in November.
And assuming he actually leaves office, which is another thing we have to worry about in 2020.
Assuming all that.
My man said, they asked him, and this is not a political show. You can go to Chris for that on Patreon. They asked him, if you lose, you know, will you have a peaceful transition of power? We'll have to see. We'll have to see. like, nigga, it's in the Constitution.
This isn't an option.
Yes.
You got to go.
Like, much like you kicked all those poor people out of your properties in New York City back in the day, you got to go. Rent's due.
Yeah, even McConnell would say, nah, he'll go. Don't worry. I'll be curious to see the same people who have found this new courage to be racist over the last 4 years. Mm. Will that energy continue on if Biden wins? Or will we see what we saw, I think, the 8 years prior, where we clearly knew racism was going on, but it wasn't in your face. It was more passive.
Yeah, because you didn't have somebody at the top stirring it up.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's your MMA story for the week, probably for the next month. But, yeah, do check out a friend of the program, Andreas Hale, because he definitely has some worthwhile things to say about this. And check out the Corner podcast.
Yes.
Because I believe they dropped a new episode where he talked about the Kobe Covington thing.
Yes, yesterday, on Wednesday.
Okay, yeah, so check that out for more in-depth discussion about that. But since we are kind of talking about some real-world things, Marcus, before we get too deep into sports, a couple things that happened in the last week or so since we recorded. The first one, which I just mentioned, was the passing of Ruth Bader Ginsburg, the Supreme Court justice, long time, like before we was even thought of, Marcus. Ruth Bader Ginsburg was out here. What's the documentary, the Notorious RBG?
Mm-hmm.
You go back and look at that and see like what she was doing back in the day before she achieved the role of Supreme Court justice and then, you know, been on the court probably most of the people listening's lifetime. And unfortunately, finally passed away last Friday after like several, like in the last 2 years, even Marcus, just like several health scares. And, you know, she kept holding on, kept fighting and just wasn't able to do it anymore. So now, Marcus, we got a vacancy on the Supreme Court to throw on top of everything else going on in 2020.
Yeah. That was Friday night. That was one of those oh shit moments where we all knew she was ill, but she had sort of been in and out of hospital, and I just figured, you know, she was doing okay, as okay you can be with you know, cancer. But yeah, she died. She was 87, correct?
Yes.
87, and opens up a Supreme Court seat, which this weekend, I guess we'll have an idea of a name for a possible candidate for that. And it's going to be, I mean, considering this is a job for life, if Trump nominates someone in their 40s, we could be looking at a Supreme Court for maybe the rest of our lives that is going to be very conservative.
Yeah, and the hot word on the street is, like, he's got a couple very conservative, like, young female candidates that he wants to put on the bench. And so,
who are anti-abortion, by the way.
Yes. Yeah, that's a big thing. Probably anti a lot of things. But abortion is certainly the top of that list. Yeah, Marcus, it's crazy. So, again, this is probably a better question for Chris. We might have to do something, like you and I were talking the other night. We might have to do something election related as we get closer to it, but we'll let y'all know about that. But I'm gonna need the Democrats to pull out every trick in the book that they can pull out, Marcus. If this lady is coming to the court for the hearing or whatever, put a banana in her tailpipe, put some sugar in the gas tank, slice the tires, whatever you got to do. If she finally make it to the hearing, I need you to read them questions real slow. So stall, drag, block this as much as you can. And just drag your feet. play that Dean Smith four corners offense, Marcus. That's what I'm gonna need him to do for the next 2-3 months.
That's the thing. Even if he loses in November, he's still in the office in January.
Yeah. Yep.
So this is probably going to happen before January 20th.
I'm gonna need y'all to dig up some dirt. Any of her ex boyfriends? Maybe she got an ex girlfriend. Some kids she ain't paying for. Find something on this lady.
Do you think that's a strategy? Because, listen, I'm going to assume this is not a Brett Kavanaugh situation, this woman. I feel like if you're doing it for a woman, you're probably doing it for a better human being than a guy.
I mean, it's all relative when you talk about Trump people.
It is, but there's certain, I mean, morally, that's one thing, but just
yes,
her day-to-day life, I'm sure, is... She's probably been on a better path than some of the men.
She might not have been a sexual abuser. She just embezzled money. Like that's the line we're looking at, Marcus.
Well, at this point, you know what?
Yeah, this is crazy, man. This is crazy. So yeah, there's not a lot they can do, Marcus. But whatever they got to do, they got to do it.
Okay, can we talk about Mitt Romney real quick?
Yeah, let's talk about Mitt.
Mr. White Panderer. I am just, you know, for the last, I would say, probably since the entire Trump presidency, he has sort of been, he's definitely a Republican, but he's trying to distance himself from Trump. He's trying to be that Republican who sees issues with what's going on in the White House, but is also trying to save the Republican, you know, party in a sense.
He's trying to be the new John McCain.
Yes. Oh, there you go. Perfect.
And look, I'm sitting over here like Draymond looking at Paul Pierce, like, you ain't John McCain. These people don't love you like that.
Yeah. That's who he's trying to be. And
he's trying to be the new McCain, the Maverick.
Until this week when, you know, RBG dies, the discussion quickly shifts towards filling the seat and knowing that Romney, he could have blocked this. I mean, he could have, you know, made a fight out of it. And what does he do? He caves.
Well, that's the thing. They only needed four Republican senators to be like, nah, let's wait on this.
And there were two that came out pretty fast to say, let's, you know, hold on this. Romney could have been the third. But, you know, I don't want to hear about Mitt Romney ever again.
Mitt was like, allow me to reintroduce myself. My name is Mitt. But man, like it's crazy. And so I see so many people this week, Marcus, like just kind of normal, like not even liberal Democrats, but just like kind of like moderate, like suburb, you know, soccer mom type of Democrats that I know on my timeline of people in the neighborhood. And you would think you're talking to a Black Panther because they're like, we got to do something about this. We got to shut this down now. Well, okay, Miss Carla. Because like I don't think Marcus, like it's probably going to get pushed through. They're going to push through their nominee. But I feel like they might win in the short term, but in the long term, like this might have bad effects for them. But they don't care because all they want to do is get the power.
Yeah, I mean, I could see them getting the Supreme Court, but then losing the White House.
Yep, and maybe even the Senate.
And the House. And then that's going to be interesting, at least for the first 2 years, where you have the balance of power shifted in one way, but then the ultimate final call lies in the hands of the Supreme Court.
Which, like, honestly, to me, that's best case scenario right there. Because at least you got some checks and balances. Mm-hmm. Whereas if Trump finds a way to get back in, it's gonna be wild. Y'all thought 2020 was the end of the movie. 2020 was just a prequel. 2020 was Terminator 1.
I can't even imagine four more years.
Last thing on that though, Marcus, you know, talking about the elections, because I did send off my ballot today. So everybody out there, vote if you haven't. I know a lot of states have already started early voting. So go ahead and get up on that. But how about your boy, Jamie Harrison, Marcus Vandenberg? Like, because I think if there's anybody I want out the most, like it might be Mitch McConnell, but it's probably Lindsey Graham. It would make me so happy if Lindsey Graham lost to this Tony Gwynn looking brother from South Carolina. Look, y'all listen to the show right now. Pause the podcast and look at a picture of Jamie Harrison. Tell me that man don't look like Tony Gwynn. it will make me so happy if we had Senator Tony Gwynn from South Carolina beat Lindsey Graham.
I'm guessing he doesn't sound like Tony Gwynn.
No, he sounds like because I expected him to sound like your boy Darius Rucker. But his you know, his voice ain't that kind of, you know, he doesn't have that kind of gravity in his voice. But, you know, he's just kind of like, hey, I'm Jamie Harrison from South Carolina. I'm just trying to do my best for my people. Like, okay, brother. But he raised $6 million last week, so I ain't mad at him.
Election night's going to be really interesting. I mean, there's just outside of the main event, there are a lot of undercard elections on here that, you know.
And we might not even know the answers till 3-4 days later because of so many mail-in ballots, which is going to be crazy.
Yeah. I mean, you should probably prepare for that now going into it. Yep.
Especially in a state like yours, Marcus, which is so populated. Like, it might take y'all a couple of days for that one.
Well, for the lower level, I mean, the president, we know who we're voting for.
Yeah.
Like, that's one of those you can probably declare once the polls close. But
now Florida gonna be something else though.
Florida, Ohio, Michigan.
Yep. They say Georgia's looking pretty close. Iowa.
Texas is close.
Yeah, I think Trump's still going to win Texas, but it'll be close. My hope is, like, yeah, Trump wins by a point, but because it's so close, that helps the down ballot.
Yeah, the latest 538 poll has Biden at the 7-point lead over Trump.
In Texas?
In the national poll.
Okay.
Texas, they have Trump by 2 points.
Okay, yeah, that sounds right. But yeah. I feel like it's gonna come down to a numbers game, Marcus. Because I feel like the mail-in ballots are gonna favor Biden. But
mail-in and early voting
is going to favor Joe probably. But the question is, because we know Trump folks going to be up out there with no masks on trying to get their vote on. But it's a matter of will the rest of us be enough?
I think so. I don't remember.
If this was an NBA series, I'd be like, Uncle Joe in seven. Like, it's going to go seven games, but I think Joe going to pull it out at the end.
Even in 08 with Obama, I don't remember a push like this to even promote how to register to vote.
Right.
Let alone what we're going to see starting probably next week with the first debate on is.
Oh, yeah. That's going to be something.
Getting the messaging out about to vote. You know,
I think like with Obama, it was just like Obama was naturally exciting, you know, not only being the first serious black presidential candidate, but like Obama could cut a promo. You know what I mean? And so I think like people were just naturally excited for Obama in a way that we saw in 16, like they weren't for Hillary.
Yeah.
Like Hillary ain't had that juice that Barry had. But like I feel like it started off kind of slow for Joe. In terms of people kind of feeling like, because I still feel like even as recently as maybe a couple weeks ago, people were like, I don't want to vote for Biden and Harris, but it's better than Trump. Well, now, especially after RBG died, I feel like people was like, nah, I don't even care if I like Joe. We got to get Trump up out of here.
And I think that's, you know, not that there's any positives in her death because she's, you know, she still died, but I think that's going to be the thing that really pushes Biden over the top in the sense of people coming out to make sure they vote is, especially the women who are not.
Yeah. You know. And then really, honestly, if Joe can just narrow the gap among white women, right? Cause that's the secret weapon Trump had last time where he had 53% of white women voted for Donald Trump.
Yep.
If Joe can cut into that, then I think it's going to be a wrap. And maybe, like you said, like maybe the silver lining with RBG is that a lot of white women in particular, because black women was already voting for Joe.
Yeah.
But maybe these white women are like, oh, yeah, like I didn't care about all these other issues, but now they're talking about me. And so, like, maybe that'll promote them to go out and vote for Joe Biden.
I think so. I mean, why you would have voted for Trump in the first place baffles me, but there's nothing that he's done the last 4 years that would say, let me double down on this man.
Right. Well, that's the thing, because I know people that voted. I think there's two types of Trump voters, Marcus. And then I'm going to break it down like this, because I feel like in 16, there were two types of Trump voters. There was the type of Trump voters that are just like racist and hateful and don't like women or don't like gay people, and they still riding with Trump. But I also feel like there were some people that didn't like Hillary and were looking to shake up the system, and they're like, hey, what's the worst that could happen? And like, cut to 4 years later, oh, that happened. So I'm hoping like those folks are like, yeah, we like, okay, we gave this dude a shot, but now we know that that's not the way to go this time.
I think if Biden ran in 2016, Biden would have run. He would have won. It would have been not an issue.
Yeah. Yep.
But
yep.
With Hillary, there was, you know, personal baggage, let alone just Clinton baggage.
Yes, Clinton baggage was a big thing.
Perception of like, you know, this is, we've been through 8 years of this. We've been through a Clinton cycle.
Yep.
Let's not forget the man was impeached when he was president.
Like, we really trying to let Bill back up in here?
Yeah, so.
And, to be real with it too, Marcus, like, there's all that. Like, I think the campaign, like, they ran a bad campaign. Like, especially not going back to, like, Michigan and those states like that towards the election day was a bad move. I feel like you said, there was a lot of that Clinton baggage. There was a lot of Hillary baggage. But then also there was sexism. Like, we can't.
She's still a woman. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I feel like there's a lot of sexism against Hillary and the way that she was covered. And like you said, I feel like Joe, like, yeah, we're going to scrutinize Joe. We're going to ask Joe these hard questions. But I feel like Joe and Hillary could say the same thing. And even if Joe ran the exact same campaign as Hillary did, Marcus, let's say he made all the same mistakes, I feel like Joe still would have got the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah.
In a way that Hillary wouldn't.
I mean, we've talked about this on the show. We've noticed it just with Trump now in the way he goes after Biden compared to Clinton.
Yeah.
He is not spending, if you look at his tweets, he's not spending his energy focused on Joe Biden the same he was doing after, you know, crooked Hillary or, you know, the email. Like, it's just totally different. There's a level of white maleness, a respect there that I think deep down Trump has for Biden on some level, just being, you know, look, they're at the same age, right? You're looking at up here, essentially. The only difference would be your political affiliation.
Yeah. And I feel like with Joe, like, there is a, and this is a big difference, though, I think, between Joe and Hillary. When Joe gets, because Joe is just kind of like, you can say what you want about his mental faculties or, you know, some of the gaffes or whatever. But I feel like people genuinely like Joe. Whereas I feel like most rational people could say, like, yeah, Hillary's much more qualified. But from a personal level, I don't connect with her. Yeah. Whereas with Joe, you're like, oh, man, that's Uncle Joe. And so I feel like that likability and just like, because he's got Kamala to do the dirty work, right? Like, Kamala could come in and be the pit bull and like really take it to Trump. And Joe's just like, oh, shucks, what can I say? Mm-hmm. I'm only going to be here 4 years anyway. So, yeah, I feel like, if I was going to put money on it, Marcus, I would say Biden and Harris should win. But it's going to come down to the numbers.
Yeah, it's going to be ugly either way. You know, if Biden wins, people are going to be mad. If Trump wins, people are going to be mad.
Yeah.
And happy holidays, you know.
You thought Thanksgiving was awkward before.
But what a great excuse to not have your family over because of COVID.
Right.
Just to avoid the awkward conversation about the election.
And that's the other thing. Like, COVID's still around here. Rona ain't left.
Nope.
Rona's sticking around like Despacito on the charts, Marcus. Rona's sticking around like that Lil Nas X Billy Ray Cyrus collaboration. They ain't going nowhere.
Still number one. For the 27th straight week. Coronavirus.
Like, nigga, this is some Michael Jackson Thriller type stuff right here. Yeah. I keep saying this, Marcus, before we get to sports, one last thing about the real world, which, again, adds to the gut punches that we've gotten in 2020, Marcus. I feel like ever since Kobe died, ain't nothing going right. Because this week we finally heard from Louisville in terms of the charges that were going to be levied against the police officers that killed Breonna Taylor.
Yeah. And, surprise, there was no indictment towards her murder. I was not expecting it. So I think my reaction yesterday was like, obviously upset, but it felt a little different than just some of the other, so the other bad news in 2020.
Right.
The one indictment that did come out was not even for her death, technically.
Nope.
It was
I think
for,
this was, like, I think this is...
And this is the insulting part.
Yes, I think, I was going to say, I think what made people even more upset than the fact that, right, it wasn't any legitimate charges. It's like the charge that was put down was for, go ahead and let the people know that they ain't heard the story.
So it was for the neighboring apartment where Breonna Taylor and her boyfriend were staying. You know, that the grand jury determined that the shooting endangered the neighbors because it was reckless gunfire. And
it was a wanton endangerment was the charge.
And that
because we can endanger the neighbors. We're not worried about the person that actually got hit by the bullets. We worried about the people that theoretically could have got hit by the bullets.
Yes. Yes. And that is a felony discharge. I think it's up to 5 years in prison.
Mm.
That's not going to happen. You know?
No.
It felt like someone had to take some type of L, and this officer will have to, you know, go through a trial, and he'll get off, and he'll go
it's
on.
It's like the lightest L career. Possible.
Yeah.
It's like a lowercase L.
Yeah. So that happened in the afternoon, and then last night in Louisville, two officers were shot during a protest in the city, and they have I didn't realize they arrested someone. So they charged Lorenzo Johnson, 26, with 14 counts. Oh, no, excuse me. This is the officer who was charged with the wanton endangerment. Never mind.
Okay, because I was going to say, how you going to charge this man with 14 counts and the other dude got one count?
Oh, no, take that back. Hold on. Now they arrested the suspect. Okay.
Because what I was going to say, Marcus, earlier, you know, you were like, you weren't surprised. I think the thing that surprised me wasn't the lightness of the charges. I thought at least they were going to try to placate people. Like, I knew it wasn't going to be like first degree murder or nothing, but maybe like manslaughter or something. Something where at least people would be like, okay, that's something. Whereas with this, like you said, it's like an insult. Because it's like, You charging this man for basically waking up the neighbors.
Yeah.
Versus the death of this young woman.
You know what threw me off? This is the second time this week I've seen this phrase, wanton endangerment, and I just assumed that it was in reference to the cop from yesterday, but no, this was charged to...
Oh, that's what they charged the dude with too?
14 counts of it, and 2 counts of assault on a police officer after 2 officers were shot during protests in the city. So, yeah.
They really trying to boost up their wanted endangerment quota for the month.
Man, this is going to be like Law and Order. First episode will be
all about this. it's disrespectful, Marcus. I think, like, because I've seen some people like, well, the family shouldn't care because they, you know, got the civil settlement or whatever. And it's like, that's not what it's all about, right? Like, if you kill my, I don't even have a child, but if you kill my child, at minimum, like, I should be getting a check. But this is about more than that. This is about holding the people that caused her death accountable, and the ruling or the charge does not do that. And so, yeah, like I said on Twitter the other day, Marcus, like, I'm not out here trying to advocate violence and rioting and stuff, but I understand.
It puts the police in the quote-unquote good police, it puts them in a tough spot because they are, you know, obviously, you know, still have to do their jobs, but then they also know, like we saw in Los Angeles, there's a larger target towards retaliation towards police. So I'm not sure what exactly will defuse that besides some type of national defunding of the cops, which won't happen.
If not right away. If we had competent national leadership, I think a lot of this would have already been nipped in the bud.
Yeah.
Like we need a hot Obama beer summit track to bring the nation back together. Like that's what you could talk about Obama's policies and this and that, but Obama was really good, Marcus, at those moments of just calming down the temperature in the room.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that Trump has no capacity for. And so like, and a lot of like the AG in
Daniel
Cameron, who spoke at the RNC last month. Like you could tell this brother is not doing what's in the best interest of the community, because he's just repeating these kind of law and order, not the good law and order, not the law and order with Lenny Briscoe and Ice-T and Olivia Benson, but you know, the Donald Trump law and order. He keep repeating those types of cliches, and you could tell, man, people are tired, and when people are tired, this is the type of reaction that you're gonna get from tired people.
Yeah. It feels like he's setting himself up for some type of political career.
The problem with that is that political career only works if things continue the way they are.
Yes and no. I mean, if Trump loses, they still need to find someone to sort of groom for 2024. What if we had a black Republican president?
I get to see it now. Daniel Cameron and Jason Whitlock, the perfect ticket. I'm just going to sip. Just going to sip on my energy drink and let the audience enjoy that one for a second.
Would the races allow themselves to vote for a black Republican? Or would they sit it out?
I think it would have to be the right black Republican, Marcus, because we already saw. And I'll give his brother credit, man, because when he was kind of doing his thing in his prime, I wasn't really feeling the man. But now in hindsight and seeing what he's doing now, I have a little bit of respect for the brother. And that's Michael Steele, right?
Mm-hmm.
When Michael Steele was in charge of the Republican Party, the RNC head, he kept telling them, he's like, all right, look, we got a certain segment of white people on lock, but we can't keep winning with just that certain segment. We need to reach out to these Latino folks, reach out to these black folks. And so, like, even though I don't agree with the policies Michael Steele was promoting, I feel like he had the right idea. But a black dude like Michael Steele, I don't think like they would get behind. It's got to be somebody like who is your man, the sheriff? That fool out there wearing that cowboy hat, the sheriff David Clark.
Oh man,
somebody like that. It had to be a brother like that, or somebody that's just like allowing himself to be used, like Herschel Walker. Herschel Walker is going to be the next president. Herschel Walker, what's your platform? All I know is I got a platform for my chicken wings, because Herschel Walker does have his own brand of chicken wings. It'd be like, did you ever see Undercover Brother?
No.
Undercover Brother was the movie with Eddie Griffin. It was like the black kind of spy knockoff or send up. And they had a plot point where the quote unquote man was trying to destroy blackness. And Billy Dee Williams was in it playing like a Colin Powell kind of figure. Mm-hmm. And they were like, oh, the general's going to run for president. And like our first black president, like Republicans like him, Democrats like him, he's going to be our first black president. And the man got to him and gave him like some serum that weakens black people's minds. And so then they're like, had this big press conference, and it was like the general here with a special announcement. This could be the moment where he announces his historic presidential run. And he's like, I'm the general, and I'd like to introduce you to my platform, the General's Fried Chicken. And he had like this whole KFC looking round out. He's like, don't forget my world famous General Sides. So good they make you want to bomb another country. And he just took a bite of chicken, and the chicken like blows up in his face, like, it's the bomb. And I'm like, that's the type of black person I feel like the Trump Republicans could get behind.
I could see that.
But yeah, like, to kind of put a button on this, Mark, it's like, yeah, like, I feel like it's gonna get worse before it gets better, but like, condolences and prayers up for like the Taylor family, because this, like, I can't even imagine being in a situation like this, Marcus.
Yeah, it's, you know, let alone you've lost a family member, but now you're in the spotlight, and
yeah,
some people don't, like, I don't want that attention, especially not for this. It's different. No. It's for something that is a positive thing, but to lose a loved one and then you sort of thrust into this, and it's just a lot. And $12 million isn't enough to cover what they're going through.
Cause you can't bring nobody back for $12 million. Like, you can't bring nobody back for any amount of money. But I think that's why, like, I have a lot of respect for, like, the mothers of the movement, like Trayvon Martin's mother and some of the other mothers who have lost, their sons and daughters to incidents like this, because it's like, yeah, like, you're right, Mark, it's like, not only did you lose that person, not only did you not get justice for that person being taken, but now you have to kind of lead a movement, you have to kind of be a voice for this, and a lot of people, I'd say most people, Marcus, aren't cut out for that. Like, most people wouldn't want that, but like these parents have kind of stepped up, and they're like, you know, like George Floyd's family and you know, Rayshard Brooks' family, like, stepped up and said, you know, we're not gonna let our family member die for nothing. You know, we at least gonna try to find some way to help our brothers and sisters out of this. So I got to give them all the respect in the world.
Yeah. One quick side note before we go on to our next segment. We mentioned Daniel Cameron, the Kentucky Attorney General. Did you know he played college football, Nate?
Really?
Yeah.
At
Louisville? Yeah.
So he would have played for what year did he play?
What year? He played 05 and 06. And
Ooh,
the 06 team was in the Orange Bowl. They beat Wake Forest.
Okay, so he's a relatively young dude.
He's 34, yeah.
Yeah, you're too young to be that dumb, brother. I know you like the saying, Mark, you know, young, dumb, and what, but like, you're too young to be that dumb, brother Cameron. You like the new J.C. Watt, the millennial J.C. Watt.
Oh, man, what a headline.
J.C. Watt could have been a black presidential candidate for the Republicans.
Yeah.
Has anybody heard from J.C. Watt lately?
Not this year.
I'm trying to think, in 16, was he down for Trump back then?
I think he was. Let me see real quick.
Cause you ain't like J.C. Watt was like he was supposed to be like the next big thing for them.
That's right. He started the Black News Channel last year.
Oh,
and that launched this year. He endorsed Rand Paul.
Okay, that tracks. So
that's unfortunate.
Black News Channel, is that because there's a radio station out here, Marcus, that just switched to news, and it's like urban theme news. Is that part of that?
No, it's just TV. I think this is separate.
Okay, I think the one that it's like the Black News Information Network is the radio station.
Okay, and
it's,
the one of the big investors in the Black News Channel. You want to take a guess?
Byron Allen?
No.
That would have been hot. Crumbs is out here like, coming up next, the Middle East Peace Accords.
Not, sadly, it's not Byron Allen. It is Shad Khan.
Oh, father of AEW's Tony Khan.
Yes. And
yes.
Yes. So.
And we know, because Shad, last time around, Shad was a Trump supporter.
Yes, he was.
Supposedly he's not, but you never know.
You
not
never
this time
know.
Around.
Yeah, we'll see.
Till we see them tax returns.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's what's going on in the real world. I guess we can talk about some sports, Marcus. Let's start with some more news, some current events from your neck of the woods, Marcus. Are you ready for some Pac-12 football?
Six games in a playoff game to determine the Pac-12 champion. So seven games total starting in November. And
why are they doing this, Marcus? Here's the thing. I'm not trying to take
the,
you know, I'm not
the
trying
playoffs.
To,
they're eligible for the playoffs now.
I'm not trying to, you know, speak bad about the kids or the coaches or anything like that, Marcus. But you live in California. Is California really right now the place to be having college football games?
Why not? Why not, Nate?
Like your air quality ain't that great right now, brother. You're like, yeah,
it's better. Yeah, it's better.
It's better. I don't want to object our man Herman Edwards to these conditions, Marcus, is what I'm trying to say.
I mean, the problem is you're allowing NFL teams to play. So once that started happening, it feels like you can't punish college teams for not playing. And I would argue there's more on the line for some of these college kids that are probably fringe players that they probably need some more tape, you know, six, seven games of the season in order to go from guy who doesn't get drafted to a player who can end up, you know, getting drafted and becoming a millionaire and taking care of his family. So I know people want to make this, you know, listen, I know the risk of COVID, and you will see players that are opting out. It's funny enough, we've seen a lot more players opt back in, especially in the Big Ten. But at the end of the day, I think it comes down to how comfortable is the player in playing.
Yeah.
And if the player is comfortable and the conferences are doing what they should be doing when it comes to testing and quarantining and making sure. And we've seen a lot of this week. We've seen a lot of canceled football games, which, you know, that's a good thing. It's, you know, better to be safe than sorry. And I think you need to figure out a way to allow them to play, because it's just, you know, there's it comes back to money, and there's a lot of money on the line.
Yep.
A lot of that's what it comes down to.
See, that's why I don't begrudge the kids, Marcus. Obviously, the kids want to play. But I think, and again, like you said, once the NFL kind of opened the door, you know, everything's on the table. My thing is, and you know, it's less to do with the kids, or not even anything to do with the kids at all. It's to do with the adults in the room, right? Mm-hmm. And to make sure that they're not doing this just for that check, because like you said, there are dollars in this, man, TV dollars and all this other good stuff and revenue for these schools. But I hope they have a plan in place, you know, to protect the kids, because if not, like we know, Marcus, the what would you call it? The illusion, the facade of student athletics. You know, like we know these colleges don't care about these kids besides the revenue that they can generate. But I would hope that they actually take some time and make sure that the system is set up in place to, you know, give the kids the best opportunity to play, but also to protect them.
In the case of the Pac-12, they are going to have, I believe, some type of rapid testing where you can test and get your results back within minutes compared to within hours or days. And if they're able to pull that off, I think that is your best bet for ensuring that when you do have these games, that players on both sides are COVID-free. And I think you have to take it week by week. You know, you probably have some weeks where players test positive and they're out. Some weeks nobody might come back positive. I mean, this is still college kids we're talking about. We're talking about a college campus where the rest of the students probably aren't getting tested as frequently as these athletes.
Yep.
College kids make bad decisions. So,
especially now the Four Loko got that hard seltzer on these streets, Marcus.
Yeah.
12%. Like, I don't think, like, this ain't White Claw you sipping on here, Timmy.
No.
So, yeah, college football is back in increments now, I guess. But here's the thing, Marcus. We worried, you know, we concerned about these kids and want to make sure that they're not catching COVID. But I think I got to be real with the audience and let them know that I caught a little illness over the weekend myself, Marcus Vandenberg. I'm recovering from.
What's that?
A little illness. I think most people, you know, that came up in the greater Atlanta region have suffered the same illness as I have, Marcus.
Uh-oh.
A little something we like to call Falcons fever, because it's going to get you. Right when you think you're doing all right, Falcons fever is going to come in and bring you back down to earth, Marcus.
Have you recovered from your fever last Sunday?
Well, see, here's the thing, and this is the most 2020 statement I think I've ever said this year, Marcus. Because for those who don't know, like, the Falcons were running roughshod over America's team, the Dallas Cowboys, and choked up a lead, reminiscent of another fateful choke job that they committed on the biggest stage of the game. But here's the thing, Marcus. Like, obviously, I was disappointed in my team, but I was, at the end of the game, I was kind of ambivalent, right? Like, I feel like I was less disappointed in the Falcons losing than I was disappointed when the Patriots lost. And as a statement, Marcus, I never thought I would say, because I was watching that Sunday night football game with the Pats and the Seahawks, and I'm like, Cam is going to do it. Let's go, Patriots. Come on, New England. I see you, Coach Belichick, and I'm like, what is going on? What has happened, Marcus, to me in 2020 where the Falcons loss isn't hurting me, but the Patriots loss is the one that I'm hanging on the edge of my seat for?
I know what's happened, Nate. You have developed Falcon fever antibodies, Nate. You are becoming immune to Falcon's fever.
Mm.
And instead of, you know, taking you out for a week after coming down with a fever, asymptomatic. You just, you know, you know you have it, but you're not showing any symptoms.
Right.
Therefore, you know, go about your life.
If I can survive that Super Bowl, I can survive anything, Marcus.
Pretty much.
So, like, I think, like, I'm one step away from Bo, from Bomani Jones, where he's just sworn off all Atlanta teams. And the only thing, they keep pulling me back in, Marcus, because not only do my Hawks got your boy Trey the Barge, I love watching Trey the Barge out there, but the Atlanta Braves.
Well, Bo's in on the Braves, though. That's the one team that will fuck them.
Yeah. The Braves still doing work here in this Major League Baseball season. So Atlanta's got, you know, Atlanta giveth and Atlanta taketh away.
Yeah, when I make my move to Atlanta, I'll have to decide if I want to get on that bandwagon called the, you know, Atlanta Falcons. I'm not sure if I want to subject young Simba to questionable football.
Hey, at least the stadium's nice, though. They got a real nice stadium.
Nice stadium.
I still don't know why the hell they got, I mean, obviously it's money, but like, why the hell would you name your stadium the same as your chief rivals?
Oh, I mean, the check. The check determined that one.
It's like, don't Mercedes. Like, you couldn't have found somebody else, Lexus, Jaguar?
The Superdome's changing names, though.
Oh, they are.
I believe their sponsorship is up either this year or next year. So, yeah, it'll just be the one, Mercedes-Benz.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
I got over the Falcons game, Marcus, and I think maybe the thing that hurt me the most in that game was, if we're going to lose, could you at least give Julio Jones a couple of touchdowns? and have us lose? Because, like, not only did you hurt me in real life, but you hurt me in fantasy as well, Atlanta Falcons.
How is your fantasy team?
I'm in three leagues, and one that we're both in, the Kings of Sport, the Briscoe Sanders Fantasy Football League. I'm 1-1 in that one. In the CBS Sports League I'm in, I'm 1-1. And then in this is the most shocking development of all, Marcus. In the Post-Wrestling Fantasy Football League, I'm 0-2.
And Way is 2-0, huh?
And I play Way this week.
Oh, man.
So, according to Yahoo's predictions, I'm the favorite by like 60 to 40. But we'll see, man. Because every time I had a better team in these first 2 weeks in the Post-Wrestling League, somebody's either had a crazy day, like that week with Cam Newton just went crazy. I think it was week one when Cam Newton had all those running yards.
Mm-hmm.
I got took out by that. And then this week, I want to say it might have been Aaron Rodgers that took me out. But then I also had some injuries because I had Le'Veon Bell on my team. And now Le'Veon Bell's on the IR on my team.
A lot of injuries this past Sunday, by the way.
Miles Sanders didn't do nothing the first week of the season for me.
He was hurt, yeah.
Yep. DeSean Jackson didn't do anything week one. Who's the other guy I had? James Conner killed me in the first game. James Conner didn't give me anything that first game.
That's right. And it was Benny Snow who took over.
Yep. Yeah, because I almost went to the waiver wire and dropped Conner for Snow. But someone said, Nate, don't fall for the okey-doke. And fortunately this week, James Conner looked like he's back, but that still didn't help because I lost. But yeah, it's been rough in that one, man. And so like the only way I can get my groove back in the post league is by beating that man called Ting. And so I told Way, you know, it's not personal, it's just business this week.
Who's on his team?
Way's got let me bring up
I'm sure it was auto draft. I know Way didn't draft this team, so
no, Way strictly auto draft, and he's got a handler. Like I think it's MJ from NJ is Wade's official handler. And basically all he does is make sure Wade has a lineup that can play. Like okay. He doesn't make trades or anything. So the matchup this week in the post wrestling league between the Wakanda Panthers and Wade's Cowboys at quarterback. Oh, we got a matchup of black quarterbacks. Cause I have Cam Newton as my starting quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
And Wei Ting has Jaheim Allen.
No. No wonder he's 2-0. He's my quarterback in our Briscoe Sanders league.
Yep. Receiver, I got Julio, DeSean Jackson, and N'Keal Harry. I just picked up N'Keal Harry after the last game the Patriots played. Wei's got AJ Green, which is always a coin flip. Wade's got Allen Robinson, and Wade's got Davante Adams.
Oh, okay, wow.
Running back, I got James Conner, Tariq Cohen, and Miles Sanders. Wade's got Clyde Edwards-Helaire.
Whoa.
Yeah. Wade's got Jonathan Taylor from the Colts.
Whoa.
And Wade's got DeAndre Swift from the Lions.
Wade Ting, wow.
And then tight end Wade's got Dallas Goedert, and I got Zach Ertz.
Same team.
So
both Eagles like, tight ends.
Yeah. So right now the projections are Wade at 205 and me at 215. But we'll see if that holds up.
Wow. So he's got CEH. He's got Davante Adams. He has Josh Allen, who's been incredible. Man, no wonder he's 2-0.
Yeah, well, he's got a squad. So, so yeah, we'll see. Because I feel like if I lose this week, Marcus, I might just go full heel. Like last year, and just start cutting promos and making crazy trades for no reason.
I think you should. Just lean into it.
I just, like... This is my retribution. I'm Slapjack. Wrestling is so, well, I was going to say wrestling is so bad that WWE is so bad.
Yeah, let's limit that to one company.
Yes. The other thing I want to talk about with the NFL real quick, Marcus, before we pivot to the NBA is let's go back to your neck of the woods, Marcus.
Mm-hmm.
And these Los Angeles Superchargers.
Yes.
The way they did my brother from the 757, Tyrod Taylor.
So we did have 10 quarterbacks who were black in the NFL, and we're down to 9 because
yep.
Tyrod Taylor has a punctured lung due to malpractice from a team doctor. He was getting an injection pregame for a rib injury, and the needle ended up puncturing his lung. Nothing serious to the point where, you know, he went to the hospital, got checked out, he was fine, but, you know, Philly could not play this past Sunday. He's not playing this Sunday. And the irony is, and I found out after the fact, the previous Chargers doctor.
Yes, yep.
Who has a history of issues. You can look that up. But on Monday, he put out this podcast, I guess. And him, the doctor and this other doctor, they pretty much nailed what happened without knowing what happened. Mm-hmm. Just based on what they knew about pregame warmups and sort of how things operate, and they were, you know, they went back to see that Tyrod was listed on injury report on Friday for ribs and figured, you know, he probably got a shot of something pregame, and they got it right Monday. They pretty much said what happened without, you know, putting blame on the Chargers doctors. And 2 days later, Schefter came out and said what happened. So, he did point out, though, there is a risk when you do these injections, and while it's not like super common this happens, this does happen. So I think that context is probably needed when the initial story went up, because I think people just figured, you know, this is some type of, you know, crime. But, you know, with any type of medical situation, there's always a risk there.
Yeah. I think, like, first of all, on that last doctor, like, y'all got to look this man up, because I don't know how this man kept this job for that long, doing the stuff he was doing. Doc was out here wilding. Like,
Doc was.
And now he's got
living his best life.
The podcast he's on is on the Clay Travis Network, because Clay Travis always. Yeah, he surrounds himself with the best people. But yeah, getting back to like with Tyrod, like yeah, like obviously there's a risk involved whenever you dealing with an injury like that. But like I hope, man, because I believe the contract was for $11 million with 6 guaranteed. Like I hope they just pay him the whole 11, man. Like not only did like you puncture this man's lung, but he ain't gonna be the starter. Like we already saw, like your guy came in and played pretty well. Yeah, Herbert came in, played pretty well. So, like, yeah, there's no reason for the Chargers to go back to Tyrod. So the least you could do is get that brother his whole $11 million. Plus, I'm sure there's going to be a lawsuit involved somewhere.
He was Wally Pipps. Yeah, the lawsuit would be interesting because that might be a tough one. I'm sure there's something he's probably signed at some point.
That's the question. Like, what did he sign before the procedure?
Yeah, I mean, probably nothing directly before the procedure. Maybe it's just a general
waiver
contract. Yeah, just something that says, you know, you're aware of these risks that take place. So,
like the funniest tweet I saw, though, was somebody was like, "Yo, this team finna be the Los Angeles Tyrods because this brother finna own the damn team." And I'm like. Like, you know, like, I hope, like, it ain't going to go that far, Marcus. It ain't going to be that extreme. But, like, to me, the least they could do is just, like, you know what? No harm, no foul. Oh, technically, there was harm and a foul, but we just gonna give you your whole check. Don't even worry about it, dog.
Yeah.
So and this man can't catch a break. Like this, he for real is like the Charlie Brown of the NFL.
Yeah, I think that's where you can sue is because he is going to lose his job. This is going to impact his next job because there's a chance he might not play again this season because Justin Herbert will come in and continue to play well.
Especially if Herbert goes out there and stinks it up, like if Tyrod can come back this season and get his job back, like there's a chance, you know, given what's going on with COVID, like we know COVID affects the respiratory system. And I don't know if having a punctured lung makes you more susceptible, but it certainly doesn't make your lung stronger. So, you know, we don't know how that's going to play into it. So, cause I think people were saying, like, even if you looked at him on Sunday on this, like he's breathing heavy, which I would assume one does when you got a punctured lung. So like, yeah, I think you're right, Marcus. Like it might not be the suit about, actually, you know, having his lung punctured, but in terms of hurting future earnings. So
now Anthony Lynn did say that Tyrod is not upset, not angry about what happened.
Look, this brother is from Hampton. This brother from Hampton.
Seven.
He might tell you he ain't upset. He might tell you he ain't mad, Marcus. That's just for the media. I'm sure behind closed doors, who is it? Who owns the Chargers? It's
Spanos.
I was gonna say, is it still the Spanoses? Okay, he probably cussed the Spanoses out up and down the wall. But like for the media, yes, you know, I hold no ill will towards the doctor, the medical staff, but he probably got to say that right now, Marcus. And Anthony Lynn did say that he was, you know, the starting quarterback, which I think. He probably had to do too, just because they're like, we know what happened, so we gotta make him look good to the media.
He did say that, and then Adam Schefter added at the end of his story, after that quote, the Chargers want Taylor to continue as their quarterback because of his production and reliability. He has a winning record as a starting quarterback, didn't turn over the football in week one, and has the trust and respect of his teammates. Now, that feels like something that the agent would feed to a writer, but that's a whole separate conversation. But
and like, for all we know, he might have been playing that game with a busted rib.
We don't know. He was pretty bad week one.
I think that's the thing with Ty. Like, even outside of this particular incident, Marcus, if you look at his whole career, like Tyrod Taylor has been the guy that's like, maybe to the detriment of his body, he's never been the guy to turn the ball over. You know, he's not careless with the ball.
Not at all.
He's not a top 15 quarterback, but he's not like a bottom 15. Like he's perfectly serviceable. Like he can get you through to the next guy, and that's pretty much his whole career. What he's done is get teams over to the next guy.
Yeah.
He did it in Baltimore, did it in Buffalo, Cleveland with Baker.
Tyrod Taylor is the Dolph Ziggler of quarterbacks.
He's like, you know, every now and then you can put the title on him, but, you know, he's not going to be that guy.
No, but he's not going to embarrass you. He's going to,
right,
you know, put out a decent match, but...
Yeah, he's had terrible luck. So hopefully this works out for him, Marcus, whether he plays again this season or not, whether he gets his starting job again or not. Like, I hope the team does right by him because, there's always a risk with everything, particularly, like, football in itself. Playing football just by the nature of the game is a risk, but hopefully, you know, they do right by the guy.
Yeah, I think if he's truly healthy, I think they'll give him a chance to start. Yeah. And then that leash will be so short that the first bad game he has, he'll be on the bench again.
The third and out, Anthony Lynn's like, all right, dog. Like, coach, that was the first series of the game. I seen enough.
Yeah.
Herbert, you're up. let's talk NBA real quick, Marcus, because I feel like we Donald Trump ate up so much of the show this week. But let's let's talk some NBA because as we are speaking, Marcus, yo, this has been a very LA-centric episode. But right now, as we are speaking, your LA Lakers are preparing to take the court in a pivotal, some would say, game four against the scrappy Denver Nuggets, Marcus Vandenberg.
The Lakers should be down 2-1. I think that's fair.
Yep.
I don't think there are any trouble yet with this series. I think they'll win tonight as we're recording and win either games 5 or 6. But
yeah, I called the gentleman sweep before the playoffs, but now I feel like this is gonna go six. I feel like Denver's gonna get at least one more. But I agree. I think tonight is gonna be like the LeBron game. Because we really haven't had like a quote-unquote LeBron game yet in the Western Conference Finals.
No, he had a triple-double in Game 3, but it was sort of... That was a weird game. The big man on the Lakers, Anthony Davis, JaVale McGee, Dwight Howard, combined for 4 rebounds. Total.
Yeah.
4.
Yeah.
Anthony Davis had no rebounds in the fourth quarter. I mean, he picked up 2 late in the game, and that was it. So... that was kind of an odd one. They just slipped flat. This came up with the Clippers series, with the Clippers, especially in Game 7, with the Clippers being fatigued. I'm not sure what is going on with these teams and these players in terms of just looking out of it. And maybe it's because they're playing every other day for the most part. And maybe that is not the norm.
And the Lakers are an older team.
They are an older team. You know, it is still very hot in Florida. I don't know if the humidity is a factor when it comes to these players not being used to this environment for so long. I mean, they've been there for 3 months now. And granted, yes, they're playing indoors. But if you're spending the rest of your time outside dealing or, you know, out in the elements dealing with the humidity, I don't know if that's a factor. But
so you're saying that's why the Miami Heat looks so good?
They're used to this. They're built for this. The Nuggets playing elevation, so this is nothing for them.
Y'all ain't about this humid lifestyle. but yeah, I feel like Marcus, like sometimes LeBron, I feel like he wants to get people involved. You know, maybe that's been the big knock, like one of the few knocks on him that you could put in his whole career. That
not selfish
you know
enough.
Exactly, because I feel like. You know, Kobe, if it was Kobe or MJ, like they would have came out like trying to kill him fools yesterday, in game 3. Whereas I feel like LeBron wants to get everybody, like he probably wanted to get AD going. You know, he probably wants to get, you know, Kuzma, I don't know, Caruso, some one of these other dudes, Rondo.
Caruso, come on, it's Caruso.
but I think like this is going to be like the game tonight. I feel like LeBron's going to put his stamp on it, and they're going to go up 3-1. I feel like Denver might get the next one, but then the Lakers are going to close them out.
I think you're right. The Lakers are just a better team.
Like Denver's deeper, but the top of the Lakers are better than what Denver could bring to the table.
I mean, I would even argue that Denver's deeper. I think the Lakers bench has been – since the Houston series has been a huge X factor. You know, when you mentioned Caruso, you mentioned Rondo, who looks like a 26-year-old.
Playoff Rondo.
Yeah, I mean, that. You know, I guess the one positive out of that loss was that fourth quarter when the Lakers did come back. There was a stretch there where Rondo, I think, had 3 steals in a row of just, you know, Denver had no match for – the Lakers 2-3 zone, and Rondo is just causing havoc. The Morris twin, Markieff, has looked good at times. And then Dwight Howard, who's going to start tonight, he, you know, was not a good matchup for the Houston series. He didn't play much, but against Denver, he's been a solid contributor. So
I actually like Dwight in the lineup in this series, because to me, it takes some of the pressure off of AD.
Yeah.
And so I feel like, yeah, like if you got Dwight, AD, like that, and that's just a big front line with Dwight, AD, and then LeBron at the three, like that's a good lineup.
And, you know, I think the way they struggle with the, you know, on the boards in game three, they probably need that extra. I mean, look, Dwight, you have one job, rebound and you know, lobs. That's it. That's all you have to do.
Yes, I feel like the Lakers don't get it. Real quick on the Miami series, is it over?
It's over.
It's over. It's over, ladies and gentlemen.
It's over, ladies and gentlemen. Yeah.
Marcus with the Charles Barkley guarantee.
Well, speaking of Charles Barkley, real quick, as we've been talking, the Chuckster, on Inside the NBA, this is the tweet. Charles Barkley says you can't put the Breonna Taylor case in the same situation as George Floyd, Ahmaud Arbery, because her boyfriend shot at the police. Now, I have not listened to the audio yet because we're doing the podcast. But
Wait. He said that or he tweeted that?
No, this is what I guess we said on Inside the NBA Tonight.
Wow. Charles Barkley is the black Republican that would get the votes.
Yeah.
Oh, come on, Charles.
Yeah.
You shouldn't shoot at the police. I mean, that's a good rule to live by.
But she didn't shoot at the police. It's
exactly.
Not like,
yeah, that's what I was going to say. Like that, him shooting at the police doesn't justify them killing her. Like those are, like it's an apple and oranges thing. Like if he shot at the police and they killed him, like.
Yeah.
Okay. I guess that makes more sense. But yeah, like she didn't have anything to do with that. So yeah, I don't know. Like I like Charles, man. Like, you know, like Charles is very good on TV. And I think in his heart, like Charles's heart is in the right place, but sometimes his heart and his brain don't really connect. And then when it gets to his mouth, it's a whole other story.
I mean, he does speak his mind, and on some level, I do respect that he does not hold back, even if his opinion is unpopular, or in this case, wrong. But
yeah. And I like, I don't think, like, all black people have to think that, you know, we're not a monolith. But I think one of the things I like that Dan Le Batard said about Charles Barkley that, like, makes a lot of sense to me is, like, unfortunately, Charles Barkley is the black guy that will say something that white people can then use against black people. And it's I'm not saying Charles shouldn't speak his mind, but I wish he would think more about, like, yeah, like, if I say this, then that gives all these idiots over here fuel to go against my people. And so, yeah, I wish he wouldn't have said it. I need to go back and watch it because, like you said, we've been recording, so we haven't seen it. And I wonder, because if anybody was going to say something on that set, it would have been Kenny. I wonder if Kenny checked him.
That's a good question. But that goes to – I'm sure there was a conversation that was had that, you know – was a similar conversation, you know, something that seems rare these days when you have two different opinions. It feels like you either all agreeing on the same thing or you're fighting. And I'm sure it was, you know, it was probably Ernie, to be honest, who was probably late. Let's shut.
Oh, yeah, yeah. EJ been saying it with his chest all summer, Marcus.
Yeah.
But and that's the thing. Like, I think, like, I agree with you for the most part what you just said right there, Marcus. But I feel like on issues like these, it should be, no pun intended, like, it should be more black and white, right? Because, like, we can have disagreements on the tax policy, right? Like, two rational people can argue about that. But when it's this young black girl that's killed for no reason, like, I would say most people should be like, yeah, that shouldn't happen. Like, that shouldn't be, you know what I mean? That shouldn't be an either or argument.
Yeah. But I mean, the police have become politicized. Like, it feels like, and I don't remember that always being the case. It felt like this is something new where all of a sudden, if you're pro cops, that means you are MAGA. And then there are people that are pro cops just because, look, their father is a cop, and
you're right. Because even like, and you would know better than me, Marcus. But even like back, like during Rodney King and stuff like that, it didn't feel like, because they were like there were black people, like you said, that either knew cops, had cops in their family, and they're like, yeah, like that's not all the cops, but yeah, those cops should be punished. But now it feels like you're saying, like, well, if you're a Republican, you automatically on the side of the cops.
I know where it went south, now that I'm thinking about it. It was the Blue Lives Matter movement. That's when everything went, you know.
Yep.
Even if they named the thing something else, if it wasn't such a blatant right. slap in the face to Black Lives Matter, I think it would be a little different, but that's when things went the way it's going now.
Yep. So. And that's why the Kings of Sport don't fuck with The Undertaker. like that's the other thing real quick before we get out of here, Marcus. Maybe the best thing about 2020 is because times are so political, people are telling on themselves on social media. Like, there was this won't mean a lot to you, maybe some of the listeners. Like, there's a show called Legends of Tomorrow, and when RBG passed, the lead actress of that show got in trouble because she was like, I just wish, you know, everybody could love everybody. Like, just go talk to a Trump supporter. Everybody's not bad. And it's like, lady, this ain't the time for all this, you know, come together kumbaya stuff. I'm gonna need you to go. But like with us, the people that we follow in particular, when you talk about wrestling, man, Mick Foley has stepped up this year. Stone Cold Steve Austin has stepped up for Black Lives Matter of all people. Like we said, Undertaker with his Blue Lives Matter gear. We see where he's at.
Kevin Nash.
I was gonna get to Kevin Nash before that. Like, unfortunately, like there's been some people that I really like, and I hope Marcus, like, let's say Trump loses in November, I hope that these people can kind of come back to the light. Because like Kevin Kelly, like I like Kevin Kelly a lot, Marcus. And I don't know what's happened over the last 4 or 5 months, but Kevin Kelly kind of suspect, you know, these last few months. It's like, I don't know if it's just the nature of the political season or if he always felt like this. So I hope once we get rid of Trump, we can find out the answer to that. But the good Kevin, the great Kevin, Kevin Nash out here on these streets, Marcus, representing for black people. And even yesterday, talking about Breonna Taylor, the weirdest interaction, I sent Marcus a screenshot, Kevin Nash and Michael Buffer talking about Black Lives Matter. Like, what the hell is going on in America in 2020?
Corey Ertman informed me that that's Michael Buffer's Twitter feed 24/7. Like, this is who he is.
Really? Michael Buffer out here on these social activism streets?
Yep.
Let's get ready for equal rights.
I had no idea. I don't follow Michael Buffer on Twitter.
I might have to follow Buffer from now on.
Yeah. But I, to your point about Kevin Kelly, I think we're going to see some public repenting towards after Trump loses, where people are like, you know, I have seen the light. I have seen the errors in my ways.
Right.
Please embrace me. Please don't cancel me. which, you know, that's fine. I wouldn't trust them, but that's fine if they want to.
Yeah. Because, like, I don't get disappointed a lot by like, famous people, Marcus, just because, like, you and me, we ain't no spring chickens. We know the game. But, like I've done podcasts with Kevin Kelly, so I like his work as a commentator. So, like, he actually disappointed me. I was like, really, dog? This how you feel? So I'm hoping, like, he got swept up in campaign fever. And once Trump get out of office, the fever will break. But it's like, if this the real you, dog, I'm going to have to put you over there in the corner with Mark Madden.
Oh, man.
Like, ironically, and maybe I don't know, Marcus, because I don't follow this man. But the person who I thought I would hear talking the most right now ain't really been talking, and that's your man Vince Russo.
Where's he been at?
He ain't really, like, again, I don't know because I don't follow him. But, like, I would think, like, because, you know, we see people retweet stuff all the time. Mm-hmm. Like, Vince Russo ain't really said nothing lately. So I'm like, you would think he'd be, listen, bro, Blue Lives Matter, bro. Like, I thought Vince Russo would be out here on this MAGA street. But Vince Russo been kind of quiet.
Well, Vince Russo, he's alive and well. He does a show with Stevie Ray. Is this correct?
Interesting.
On this week's Black and White, Vince Russo asked Stevie Ray to explain the family structure within the black community. Oh my God. We gotta listen to this.
We're gonna listen to the Black and White podcast next week. We'll have a review. Cause Marcus, 2020 got me cheering for the Patriots, and now I'm gonna subscribe to a damn Vince Russo podcast.
Oh, Stevie Ray, no.
Black and White. Does it say what episode number they're up to?
It does not.
Black and White with Stevie. I didn't even know, because I knew he did a show with Medusa for a little while, but I didn't know he started a show with Stevie Ray. Wow.
This is Black from and earlier White. Today. Yeah. Wow.
Stevie Ray breaks down the dynamics of the black family.
Unfortunately, this episode is available only to VIP subscribers of the brand.
I'm not paying for that. Yeah. Now, I'll check to see if he got a free show up. I might listen to a free show. But if anybody out there follows Vince Russo and listens to the Vince Russo brand, let us know. Because I'm intrigued by this, Marcus.
Wow.
Because Stevie Ray... Like, I don't think Stevie Ray going to be the type of black dude to just co-sign not Vince Russo's nonsense if Russo starts talking nonsense. Yeah. You know, I feel like, because we know, Marcus, and I'm going to put this in a nice way, we know Booker T can be, shall we say, a company man, a little bit diplomatic with his words. I feel like Stevie ain't that, I feel like Stevie's a little bit more forthcoming.
I would hope so.
which brings me back to that great time the Law just called Stevie Ray out of nowhere. And I think it was the mouth of Dan Lebranski. Like, so when's the last time you talked to your brother? You know, I ain't talked to my brother in so long. I think they were the ones that kind of got him talking again.
Yes.
Agnew and Lebranski and Pollock bringing black. That's what they're going to talk about on Black and White, how white people brought the black family together. Yeah, we're gonna have to end it on that, Marcus, because I can't think of a, like, now I'm intrigued. I might have to contact my cable company in nefarious means and see if I can get a hold of this Black and White podcast with Vince Russo and Stevie Ray, which is ridiculous. But yeah, shout out to Kevin Nash, which is where we started from. Like, Kevin Nash and Michael Buff out here on these streets fighting a good fight.
Yes.
And here's the crazy thing, Marcus, and I heard, I don't know if it's true or not, but it sounds true, which passes for news, I guess, these days to some people. Kevin Nash isn't even a Democrat. Like, Kevin Nash is a conservative dude. Like, I think somebody told me, like, he's not a Republican, but he's like a libertarian, which, like, that kind of tracks to me in my mind where Kevin Nash would lean politically. Mm-hmm. But they're like, yeah, like, Kevin Nash is not a liberal, but, like, he's real outspoken about these social issues. I'm like, okay, Kevin Nash, it's that Detroit for you.
I was going to say, I mean, born and raised in Detroit, he's seen some things, so.
Seen some things, and came up as a basketball player, so you know he had to play with the brothers, so.
Yep.
So good for you, Kevin Nash. That's going to do it, Marcus. We'll be back next time with, I'm sure, more NBA talk, and we'll see if LeBron and them were able to take an insurmountable lead, and we'll see if the Heat were able to close out the Celtics. We'll talk some NFL because we got a big game this week with Baltimore and KC.
Yes, that's Monday Night Football. That's the Monday Night game. So good luck Monday Night Raw.
Yeah, there'll be no retribution for that one in the ratings. And then, like I said, if we can find a copy of that Black and White podcast, but before the next time we talk, we will dedicate segment 4 to breaking down Vince Russo and Stevie Ray's Black and White, which is a lazy name for a podcast, Vince Russo.
But in 2020, it works.
Like, listen, bro, you're black and I'm white. We're going to call it the Black and White podcast, like those cookies you can buy at the bodega in New York.
Long Island. He's used to doing the Black and White 50s, probably. So.
That should be the logo. Just Vince Russo and Stevie Ray sharing a black and white cookie.
And it should be Russo's name in black over the white cursor of the cookie, and then and under
Stevie
white.
Ray in
Stevie
white.
Ray, yeah. Yeah. And I'm black on the cookie.
Like, this is the worst yin yang symbol ever. But yeah, that's going to do it. Marcus, before we get out of here, let the people know where they can find you on social media and anything you might have going on.
You can find me at Marco Will, MarcoWill. And we are in the middle of a 4-part series at Yahoo Sports called The Privilege of Play. And these stories break down the disparities that minority groups face when it comes to playing respective sports. We've tackled swimming so far and soccer. And we have two more coming up, and with race car driving, which we didn't talk about.
Let's talk about race car driving real quick. But also, I secretly hope you were able to score an interview with Freddie Adu for that soccer piece.
Did not mention Freddie Adu, no.
Shout out to the 10 people in the audience that remember Freddie Adu. racing, NASCAR, some big news this week, Marcus, because I think last time we talked, we might have spoke about Bubba Wallace leaving the Richard Petty team.
We did.
Leaving the 43 car, and we didn't know what he was going to do and who he was going to sign up with. And we got news of that, Marcus. He signed up with a brand new team run by Michael Jordan.
Yes, it's Denny Hamlin and Michael Jordan have just acquired the services of Bubba Wallace. And he will be the only driver on this team. I don't think the team has a name yet. I'm assuming it'll be Team Jumpman or something.
Jordan, I don't know if it's official. Yeah, I don't know if it's official, but the name that they were saying on the show where I was watching them talk about it was Jordan Hamlin Racing.
Okay.
But Team Jumpman will be tight.
I mean, you gotta have the Jumpman on the car, right? On the hood.
Yep. That's gonna be a sweet looking ride.
Great. This is gonna be great for the sport. Jordan still carries weight from not only, you know, black people like us, but like, who doesn't like Michael Jordan? Like, if you were to do like a Q poll of like most likable athletes, granted, the people in Detroit will have some feelings towards him, but not counting them, I think Jordan would score pretty high across races and, you know,
and this
all
is
that,
this
so.
Is even after we just watched a 10-part documentary series telling us how unlikable this man was.
Exactly. So having this is a big deal. NASCAR desperately needs this.
Yep.
It's not going to fit the sport.
I'm trying to think. Did Brad Doherty ever have a team?
I think he did.
Because I was going to say, like, this, I don't think this is the first time, but it's certainly the biggest name in terms of a black-led or minority-owned team. And yeah, like, just, you know, not only Jordan, because Jordan, like you said, Marcus, has that cachet with his name, but somebody like Denny Hamlin, like, that's somebody that has respect in NASCAR circles. And so, yeah, like, I'm excited for Bubba. I'm hoping, like, I think the only thing I was worried about, Marcus, is that it is, like you said, still another single car team. But I'm hoping that they put more resources in. And I think Michael said that, that they were going to give him the resources needed to compete. Because that's the only thing, right? Like, because we don't know how good Bubba is, because Bubba's never had the best equipment.
Yeah. And there's some disadvantages of being a single car team. But the obvious advantage.
Who's going to be the Scottie Pippen to Bubba Wallace's Jordan? That's what they need to do. Like, have Bubba with the car, like with the Jumpman and the 23, and then somebody in the 33 car that's just a little bit slower but still pretty good.
Daniel Suarez. Eric Amarola. Now, I'm trying to think of all the minority drivers.
Yep. Who's the guy that said N-word on that broadcast?
Kyle Larson.
maybe that's the way Kyle Larson can redeem himself. He'll be Bubba Wallace's wingman.
He's half Japanese, I believe.
Okay.
So.
But yeah, but I think this is good just for not only for Bubba Marcus, like you were saying, but also, like, I'm hoping this doesn't end with Bubba. And I don't think Bubba wants it to end with him. You know, everything that I've heard him talk about since the news was announced, like, hopefully this leads to more, not only minority drivers, but also, like, minority crew and, you know, minority ownership. And, you know, I feel like this is a lane, no pun intended, that could be a big deal for NASCAR. But it's going to come down to his success on the track, ultimately.
He's going to need to win his first race at some point that season, yeah. I think. But I think we saw a little bit of this even post-COVID, where I think the race in Atlanta, where the fans showed up, it was the race after the Confederate flag controversy.
Oh, yeah, where all the black fans showed up.
Yeah, I think we'll see more of that.
Yeah.
I'm assuming because it's Florida that Daytona will have fans in February. Mm-hmm. I think we'll see pockets of black fans coming out to support Bubba Wallace.
Imagine if you won Daytona in Black History Month.
it'd be like the scene out of WCW in the mid-90s, just trash in the ring. Fans just throwing stuff.
The N in NWO stands for new, not what you think it stands for. but yeah, Marcus, like, I feel like this could be something that could bring people in, particularly, like, man, like, I don't know the schedule for NASCAR off the top of my head, but, like, I'm thinking, like, especially that Charlotte race, like, whatever the first Charlotte race where you can bring people in, like, that could be, because you would assume Mike will be in the building.
Yeah,
like that could be a really big deal.
Plus, we haven't even mentioned the merchandise aspect of this.
Yep,
he's going to sell a lot of NASCAR merch, and you know, at one point, we fucked with NASCAR merch. We had jackets.
The car's got to be 23 though, right? Does somebody already have that number?
Let's see. I think it's up for grabs, I think.
Okay, so, yeah, it's got to be 23. Because, look, I was thinking 23 or 45, but given the current association with the number 5, he don't want that.
No. Oh, no.
Or maybe, maybe that's a way to trick some of those fans. Like, he's riding for our president. Mm-hmm. but, yeah, like, I think this is going to be a good deal. And I'm happy for Bubba, man. Like, I feel like Duke's been through a lot this year, and this is a good way to kind of cap off the season. And like you said, like, they're going to sell all the merch in the world. Because even the people that hate Bubba, they're going to buy this stuff just to burn it. And that's a check. I bought your jersey just to burn it. Looked like those stupid fans in Cleveland that bought all those LeBron jerseys to burn them.
Yeah.
Like, you know, he's still getting the money off of that. What else you got in the series? You said you did swimming, soccer, NASCAR.
And then hockey is the last one for now.
So I'm just saying, like, I don't know, Marcus, like, obviously, you know, you want to be professional for the good people at Yahoo Sports. But if the title of your article is not Ask a Hockey Negro, I'll be very disappointed.
Well, it's not my story. I'm just helping edit, so it won't be.
Hey, like, can't the editor change the title? Isn't that within your powers?
I mean, I could, but I like my job.
Like, slip it in at like midnight and then change it back real quick at like 12:01. Just get a quick screenshot and be like, Marcus is like, no, I like having a job.
Yes.
I don't want to have to go back to BET.
No.
BET. You started BET Sports with who was that guy? Was it George Johnson? Used to do the rap.
That sounds right. Yeah.
Like the little 30-second BET raps that they would do. But yeah, so that's where you can find Marcus at Marco Will. You can find me on Twitter at N8MOZAIK. Check out the show, CosPod on Twitter, KOS_POD. Facebook, facebook.com/KingsOfSport. Patreon, patreon.com/TheKingsOfSport. I think that's it for about one more week, a week and a half, something like that, whenever this comes out. Any new patrons, we're going to donate that money to the Jackie Robinson Foundation, Thurgood Marshall College Fund, as well as the American Cancer Society in honor of Chadwick Boseman. And I think that's going to do it, Marcus.
That's it.
Real quick, yeah. Primetime Deion Sanders. Shout out to Jackson State for getting that man primetime in the building.
Deion was hired this week to coach Jackson State. And I do not believe Jackson State is playing football in 2020.
Not until next year.
So. Oh, they're playing spring football here. And their schedule's already out. So the first game is February 21st against Edward Waters in Florida. So
I've never heard of that school.
I haven't either. I've heard of Mississippi Valley State, Jerry Rice.
Yep.
Grambling, they'll play.
Yep.
Alabama State, home of now Mo Williams.
Grambling game's going to be pretty big.
Yeah. Prairie View. March 27th. Okay. Southern, another big one.
Yep.
Alabama A&M.
Yep.
Alcorn State.
Yep, so, that's where my dad went to school.
Okay. Edward Waters. This must be like the NAIA of like HBCUs. I've never heard of this damn school.
Like Edward Waters.
It's a private college in Jacksonville. It is African Methodist. Episcopal Church.
It's not something you hear every day.
That is a word jumble of just church
got
terms. AME,
HBCU.
Okay. It's a member of the Independent Colleges and Universities of Florida. So
it's a little cupcake for the first game.
So a private AME HBCU in Jacksonville.
So maybe Tony Khan will be in the house.
And notable alums. Wow, Buck O'Neill.
Oh, really?
A. Philip Randolph. Wow.
Okay. Huh. Yeah, right. I'm excited, man. I got, like, again, Marcus, we don't know if Deion Sanders can coach, but I think this is a big deal for HBCU schools, which, this has been a pretty good year for HBCU schools, given that, this brings attention to them. Unfortunately, the passing of Chadwick Boseman brought a lot of attention and donations to HBCU schools. And then you had the kid earlier in the year that committed to the HBCU, which was a big deal, the basketball player.
Not Mikey Williams. He hasn't committed yet.
No, but this was a top recruit, and he could have gone anywhere.
Yeah.
And he ended up going to Howard, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a big deal.
Let me find out.
You know?
Maker. It was him.
Yes. Yep. Yep. So yeah,
he's going to be the first of, I think, several five-star players. I mean, Mikey Williams is another one who is only, I believe, he's a junior now. He's in San Diego, but he is, he has HBCUs in his top five of schools in might attend. So this is cool. The start of.
I'm trying to think. Where's the line? Is Texas as far west as you get for HBCU?
I believe it's Prairie View. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's HBCUs was not something that I was super familiar with until college, and there was a HBCU college tour that you could take, and I didn't do it, but I knew obviously about the big ones, Morehouse, Spelman, Howard, right. FAMU,
Hillman.
The fifth HBCU, Hillman.
The real HU.
Yeah. Hampton.
Yep.
I knew about Hampton. But some of the smaller schools, well, I had a cousin who went to Lincoln in Pennsylvania, so I knew about Lincoln University. But, you know, it is not the same for the West Coast people, especially if you don't have a family connection to HBCU. I'm sure you probably have, you know, no clue about them. So it might seem trivial to some people, but having someone like a Mikey Williams who has this Instagram following already, consider HBCUs provides exposure to colleges to not just, you know, white kids, but also black kids who probably don't know about those schools. So,
and it brings in that revenue, which is always a good thing. Yes. So, but yeah, so that shout out to the HBCUs and Coach Prime. But yeah, that's going to do it. Again, follow Marcus at Marco Will. I'm at Nate Mosaic, at Cospod, KOS_POD for the show. And we'll be back next week, Marcus, hopefully with that hot review of Vince Russo's Black and White featuring Stevie Ray.
Let's hope so.
So thank y'all for listening, and we'll be back next time with an all-new edition of the world's most dangerous sports show, the Kings of Sport podcast. So, for Marcus, I am the Godfather Nate Milton. And I'm gonna leave you, Marcus, with a little sample, little throwback, a little tribute to that man, George Johnson. Cause what's the school Jackson State's playing the first game?
They're playing Edward Waters.
See, yeah, I needed that for the bit. So anyway, I'm gonna act like I didn't even ask you what it was. But yeah, Marcus, so I'm gonna leave us with a little tribute to that man, George Johnson from BET. Because when Edward Waters signs on the dotted line, they go on up against the Tigers and Coach Prime. Who will win in this black football bash? I don't know, but Jackson State's getting that cash. Must be the money. Oh, we might have to go out with Must Be the Money.
Yes.
In honor of Coach Prime. one of the worst best songs in the history of music. Well, all right. Because you've been down with the Kings.
Yeah. You know, ever since I turned pro in 1989, when I signed the dotted line, it was strange. Most things changed for the better and for the worse. So I called my mama and she said, baby, must be the money. Yeah.
Must be the money. It's got to be. What in the wide, wide world of sports is going on here?
People I never thought about associating.
Must be the money.
I don't know.
That's all for this week's edition of the Kings of Sport. Be sure to come back next week for an all-new episode. You can leave feedback for the show on Twitter at KOS_POD or via Gmail at thekingsofsport@gmail.com. Don't forget to like and rate us on iTunes and tell a friend. The Kings of Sport is a production of the Mosaic Podcast Network.
Whether you like it or not, he's back. D-A-double-D-Y, that's ass.
Let me tell you something, Mean Gene. I'm gonna go out there and I'm gonna leave it all on the mat. Cause that's what I do when I get it done so I can do it. Yeah!